Alright, Shabbos, say good morning, a good night. First of all, an incredible Yasher Koach. I don't see him here. Is Saeed in here?
Yeah.
Where is Saeed? He's in, I think he's inside replenishing the breakfast. So Yasher Koach to say for the beautiful, beautiful breakfast. Also a thank you to our sponsors, to Greg and Rachel Levitan, for dedicating the daf over the entire Yom Tiv in the Schus, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should accept the tefillahs of all of Klal Yisrael, bring Moshiach and rebuild the base HaMikdash Shemhira B'Yameinu. Amen. Beautiful sponsorship. Thank you. And also our show this morning is dedicated by Justin Rebecca Meyerowitz in the Zechus of Rafua for their son Shlomo Natana Cohen Ben Rivka, who is undergoing a minor procedure. Today we open under the merits of our Talmud Torah. He will have a complete and enduring Rafua. And to thank Morty Spiro for dedicating the daf this morning. Le'iloi Nishmas Shalom Elazar Ben Elimelech Ben Sion. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an Aliyah. And the breakfast this morning is sponsored by Milt Gartner in honor of all of the members of the Shir and in recognition that there are 80 days left to the Siyum HaShas. Let me see, is Milt here?
Should I see?
Oh, Milt. Shkoyach. I thank you. And I will say, of course, our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Tishrei, Jacob and Julie Blumenfeld, who have dedicated all of the drashas and shiurim of this month in memory of their grandmothers in Shamash Shav and Aliyah and the family in Nechama. And I will say with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Choftes 28. We are picking up. Do you have enough? We are picking up on today's daf is Choftes 29. Excuse me. We're picking up on Choftes Amud Beis, the Mishnah 28. We will say. So again, Maseches Tamid has not disappointed at all. Been fantastic, Mamish, from the beginning, and we are continuing. So remember again, when we last left off, we saw the Kohen, the first Kohen, who had the opportunity to do the first part of the Avodah of the day, the Trumas Hadashen. So he's gone up on the Mizbeach. So remember again, we saw in yesterday's daf that originally it was whoever showed up for it. Then it got a bit competitive, a bit heated. The episode with one Kohen pushing the other Kohen off of the ramp, breaking his leg. And as a result, they resorted to a lottery system. We're picking up now. The Trumas Hadeshen has been done. Mishnah. Ro Echav Shiyarad. So his brethren, fellow Kohanim, saw that he was coming down the ramp of the Mizbeach. Vehim Ratzim Ubaim. And they would run to greet him. Maru. V'kidshu Yadayim V'Ragleim in Akir. So let's remember again, before doing anything in the Beis HaMikdash, you need Kiddush Yadayim V'Ragleim, sanctification of hands and feet from the Kir. Remember again, we learned about Ben Katin. So Ben Katin ultimately again was the one who expanded the Kir from 2 spouts to 12 spouts. He also went ahead and created that whole pulley system that allowed the Kir to be submerged into water. Therefore, the waters inside the Kir would not become pusle through Lina. So the other Kohanim would then go ahead and sanctify their hands and their feet. Notless Hamagrofos Vesatzinoros. So they went ahead and they took, literally, Magrofos are shovels, Sinoros are forks. You have good pictures over here. Good. So we'll say, so again, we're going to see what these are used for. So they would go and they would take these utensils, va'alu l'rosh ha-mizbeach, and they would go and they would ascend to the top of the Mizbeach. Now, we'll say, now what sounds interesting about this is not a formal part of Avodah. So as you can see, the Mishnah doesn't indicate that there was any drawing of lotteries. So whoever wanted to do this, they would take their forks, their shovels. You would see what they were doing in just a moment. They would go up to the top of the Mizbeach. And any limbs or sacrificial parts that were not fully consumed in the fires of the Mizbeach overnight, they would move over to the side. But remember again, there are no karbanos at night. So what would happen nighttime in the Beis HaMikdash? They would go ahead and they would burn all of the leftover fats and limbs over the course of the night. But obviously, you'd inevitably have stuff that did not burn over the course of the night. So they would come, the Kohanim would come with their forks and with their shovels, identify sacrificial parts that had not properly been consumed over the course of the night, and they would move it over to the side of the Mizbeach. They're going to burn it still, but from there, they would move it over to the side. Im ein stadin, if for some reason there was no room on the sides of the Mizbeach, or as you say, ain't stud in machzik, and if for some reason there was no room at the sides, sojim oso besovev, besovev. They would go and they would put it on the ledge of the Mizbeach. So I'll say again, so it looks like that you have pictures of this good in the art scroll, right? Yeah. So you have the top of the Mizbeach, and then you have a base that protrudes. Mm-hmm. So that piece of protrusion between the top of the Mizbeach and the base, That's called the sove. That's called the ledge. So if for some reason there was no room on the top of the Mizbeach, ultimately, again, for the leftover sacrificial parts, they would place it on the ledge. What would then happen? Hechalu ma'alin be'efra agave tapuach. So ultimately, again, they would begin to pile the ash on top of the tapuach. It says the tapuach was the ash pile in the middle of the mizbeach. Tapuach haya be'emtza mizbeach. So this tapuach, this ash pile, was in the middle of the altar. Pamim shahayu alav kishalosh me'os kor. They both say sometimes there was 300 kor of ash, which is an incredible amount of ash, on top of the mizbeach. Ubarigalim was actually halacha lemaisa. Ubarigalim lo hayim medashnen also, and by the regalim. So we're going to see that there obviously at some point in time. Now remember, chumas hadashen, which was the removal of ash, was the removal only of a very small amount of ash that was deposited then by the base of the mizbeach, by the corner. So that ash pile accumulated. When did it accumulate most acutely? It's incredible. On the regalim, on the yamim tovim. Why is that the Bosai? Because remember again, on the regalim, not only do you have all the kavanos of the regalim, but remember, so if the Beis HaMikdash was, what's the right word? Clogged is the wrong word. It doesn't sound like clogged.
Congested.
Full congested. Because remember again, when people are being Ola Regel, not only are you coming to Beis HaMikdash with your family and bringing the kabanos of the Chag, but remember, what else are you bringing? All of your other kabanos. Let's say I live in the Galil. So if I have to bring a chatos, or a woman gives birth, and she has to bring karbanos leida, lav dafka that people are running right to the Beis HaMikdash when they have the obligation to bring the karban. Sometimes they were dafka waiting until when? Until Yom Tov, because Yom Tov you had to come anyway. So the Mishnah says over here that the ash pile on the regalim was even bigger. Lo hayim medashon also, mepnei shunoi lemizbeach. This is actually quite beautiful, because the ash pile itself was the greatest noi, was the greatest decoration of the mizbeach. If you look at the Mefarsh, look at Rashi on the side over here, in the left-hand column, So this is actually very interesting that you wouldn't normally think that ashes are something that are too decorative or beautiful in nature. But you know, when it's the ashes of the Beis HaMikdash, there's nothing more beautiful. So dafka, to see the ash pile accumulating, was an oil mizbech. Umiyamov, top of Chavtes, lo nisatzel hakoyim elahotzi es hadeshen. And I will say, ultimately, again, even though the maisa, the ashes themselves were a nai, were decorative for the mizbeach, the coin was never derelict in his responsibility from doing chumas hadeshen. So I will say, this goes to a general motif. This goes to a general motif, ultimately, again, of Kohanim's reason. So if you look at the Rush points out over here, Melahotzi es hadeshen, chutz lemachaneh, kishay rabam zech. So just so you understand what happened over here. Chumas hadeshen is the process through which you take some of the ash, deposit it by the base, by the corner of the mizbeach. Now remember, in addition to all of that, what did you do with the rest of the ash? The rest of the ash was taken outside of the Beis HaMikdash. It was deposited somewhere outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Mechutz l'machaneh is the Lashon. Hecholu malin b'gzirin l'sadr sama'arach. So I'll say, what would they then do? They would then start bringing up wood. Remember again, so the first order of the morning is the Beis HaMikdash, the Mizbeach has had a fire burning on it the entire night to burn the leftover limbs and sacrificial parts. Which means that one of the first orders of the days is, what do they have to do? Replenish the wood. Rebuild the pyre on top of the Mizbeach. So, lechilu malin b'gzirin, l'sadr sama'arach. So they would begin bringing in wood to go ahead and reset the pyre on top of the Mizbeach. V'chi kol ha'itzim k'sherin l'ma'arachin. But are all types of wood, kasha for the Mizbeach. To which the Gemara says, hein, kol ha'itzim k'sherin. Yes, in general, all types of wood. Now, by the way, you remember that wood was only permitted to be used on the Mizbeach that it was dewormed, right? It had to be dry, because obviously, in general, you can't burn wood unless it's dried out. Remember, again, this was the big thing with Tu B'Av, right? Tu B'Av, one of the reasons it was such a big Yom Tov was because they had stocked the wood storehouses enough to take them through the next couple of months. So ultimately, but in terms of types of wood, in general, all types of wood are fit to be used for the ma'aracha. However, chutz Mishel Geffen Vishal Zayas. Rabos is actually, bless you, with certain exceptions, you can't use Geffen. So I say Geffen, Bepashtos means what? Vines. Right? You can't use grapevines and Zayas. Nor can you go ahead and use the wood of olive trees. Rabos and I will see, we'll see why this is. Aval Be'elu Hayu Regilin. Rabos says, so what are the types of wood that they normally used? What would they normally use? So the Gemara says, "Bemarbios shel teina shel elgels v'shel eitz shemen." They would use the branches, ultimately again, of fig trees, of nut trees, and eitz shemen. Literally, again, means literally shemen branches, oil trees. We'll see in the Gemara what all this refers to. I will say just a very special yashikach and a thank you to Sayid, who worked mamish so hard to prepare. Thank you. Thank you. I'm a little bit offended at that, but I sing it. So the Mishnah says as follows. Sidir Samaracha Gidola Mizrachas. We'll listen to this. So they would go ahead, and we're going to see, by the way, there was more than one pyre, right? There was what's called the Ma'aracha Gidola, the Ma'aracha Kitana, a large pyre and a small pyre on top of the Mizbeach. So Sidir Samaracha Gidola Mizracha. So they would go ahead and they would arrange the larger pyre towards the east. V'chazise Mizracha. Now, Bosse, what this literally means is the window of the pyre was to the east. So what does this mean, the window? So the way the pyre, you know what a pyre is, right? It's a series of wood, right? One layer on top of the other. There was an opening in the pyre because, remember, again, that's where you ignite the fire. You want to light the pyre from the inside. That's called the opening. We're going to see that opening. The pyre itself was made of larger pieces of wood. Inside the window is where you put like the little twigs to be able to get the fire started. I'm sorry? Like a campfire. See, there's some Rocha Gidola. So, by the way, this Mishnah counts like towards if you're working on your Boy Scout badges.
Yeah.
Like this, this counts. So, Gimara says, see, there's some Rocha Gidola Mizracha, the Chazise Mizracha, the Roshe Gezirin Hapanimim, Hayu Nogin Bitapuach, the Revach Haya Bena Gzirim Shayu Matsisim, Esha Lisa Misham. So, what says we're going to see over here? So, the Gemara is going to explain all of this, Halacha Lamaisa. But again, they would position ultimately the opening of the pyre towards the east. And they had these small little twigs. Hayinogim betapuach would ultimately touch the ash pile. The revach hayabin agzirim shayimatzisim es salisa misham. And there was some level of space, ultimately again in between these pieces of wood as well. Baro misham atzei teina yafim. So they would go ahead and they would choose from there fine pieces of teina wood. Sidras ha-ma'aracha shnia likitores kineged ma'aravis deromis. So let's listen to this. So then what would they do? They would take other atse te'ina. They would take other pieces from a fig tree. Sidras ha-ma'aracha shnia. They would arrange the second pyre. So the second pyre ultimately again was for kitores. Now we'll say, just to understand what this means. What does it mean the second pyre is for kitores? Kitores, remember, is burnt where? Kitoris is burnt inside, right? On the Mizbeach Azav, on the golden altar inside of the Kodesh. We'll say what it means is like this. In order to burn Kitoris, you need coals. Where do the coals come from? The coals come from the burnt wood. The coals were made on the Mizbeach HaChitzon. So all coals were made on the outer altar. So what they would do is they would have a smaller ma'aracha, a smaller pyre. That smaller pyre would create coals. Those coals were then taken inside to the Mizbeach HaPanimi, to the inner altar, and were then used to go ahead and burn the kitoras. So Kenegin ma'arav is deromis. This was done in the southwest corner. Mashuch min ha'keren klap et safon arba amos. Ultimately, again, and it was in the southwest corner, removed a little bit from the corner towards the north by four amos. So ba'omin chamesh sin gechalim. So ultimately, again, they would create ultimately five sin of coals. Ubishabis ba'omid shmona sin gechalim. Shesham hayu nosnim shnei bazichin levona. So we'll say, interesting enough, we'll get to this in greater depth later on. Remember, on Shabbos is when they would go ahead, they would switch off the Kohanic shifts. The outgoing shift of Kohanim would depart. New shift of Kohanim would come in. For the outgoing shift of Kohanim, they would receive the Lechem Aponim. right? That's the outgoing kohen get the lechem aponim when the out and the new lechem aponim is replaced on Shabbos as well. That was also when they would burn the 2 spoons of Lavona. Lavona's frankincense. That was burnt on this same area as well. So now we're jumping back. So if you remember again, the beginning of the Mishnah said that after the first Kohen came down from doing the Trumas HaDashen, the other Kohanim would do what? They would grab their forks and their shovels. Remember, what would they do? They would identify the pieces of sacrificial meat or limbs or fats that were not properly burnt. They moved it over to the side, ultimately, of the Mizbeach, or to the ledge if there wasn't enough room. Now what happens? What did the Mishnah describe? They reset the pyre. After now they reset the pyre, what would happen? They would come back and take all of those other leftover limbs and sacrificial parts, put them back on the reset pyre. V'etzisu shtei ma'arachos ba'esh. They would ignite the 2 ma'arachos on fire. Yardu uba lahem lelishkas hagosis. So I'm saying after this was done, so remember, this essentially what we just got in this Mishnah was ultimately coin coming down from the Trumas HaDashen, removal from the ash heap, if there are any unconsumed sacrificial parts, resetting of the 2 pyres. We've now discovered that how many pyres are there? 2 pyres, ma'arocha gidola, ma'arocha kitana, ma'arocha gidola. Its purpose was to serve as the primary fire of the Mizbeach. The Ma'arocha Kitana, it appears, what was its primary service? Ultimately, backup and also to create coals. Really, it was really to create coals for the Kitorah. Similar as Abose said, the fire of the Mizbeach HaPanimi. This is actually very interesting, because I'm sure you always wondered about this. Where did the... See, I think we often thought that, before we saw this Mishnah, that the fire of the Mizbeach HaPanimi was created inside of the Kodesh. But the truth is, it really can't be that way if you think about it. A, because the golden Mizbeach, which was the Mizbeach HaPanimi, was much smaller. So the notion of like igniting, and furthermore, it was gold. So the notion of igniting fires there doesn't exactly seem to be like the best idea. So now we see the coals were created by the Mizbeach HaChitz on the outer altar, and once the wood became coals, those coals were then taken inside from the Ma'arocha Kitana, from the small pyre to the Mizbeach HaPanimi, to the inner altar. Beautiful. So I will say, after all this was done, Yardu, the Kohanim descend from the Mizbeach, Uba lehem lishkas hagazis, and they come to the lishkas hagazis. We'll say now, lishkas hagazis to us sounds very familiar. Why? What happened lishkas hagazis? That's where the Sanhedrin sat, right? So why are they coming to the lishkas hagazis? If you take a look at Rashi on the left hand side towards the bottom, lishka yardu uba lishkas hagazis shikrova la azara lahatil payasos. So it says we're going to see the lishkas hagazis is where they drew the rest of the lots, the rest of the lotteries, for the remaining avoda of the day. We'll see, the Gemara is going to say later on, why the Dafka went there in order to go ahead and draw the lots. But that's ultimately, again, where they drew the remaining lots for the day. Beautiful. Gemara. Amar Rava. Rava says, Guzma. Now we'll say, so what we're going to see, by the way, the Gemara is referring to here is as follows. When the Mishnah said that sometimes the ash heap had 300 core of ash, Rava says, hyperbole, hyperbolic, right? It's not that exaggeration. Exaggeration. What does it mean? A lot of ash. So we'll say we're going to see a number of examples of this where sometimes Chazal speak in hyperbolic terms just in an effort to go ahead and make a point. So another example. Amrava Guzma, Hishkues Atamid Bekoshal Zov. Amrava Guzma. There was another example of hyperbole is that the Braisa says, we'll see this actually later on, tomorrow's daf, that they would give the carbon tamid to drink, and they would give the carbon, before they slaughtered it, right? And they would give it to drink from a golden cup. They were saying, now, why would they give the carbon tamid to drink? They wanted the tamid to be hydrated. Why? Because everyone knows that if the animal is properly hydrated, flaying the animal, removing the hide, is much easier. It's much easier. So now, Robert, so now the Braisa says that they would go, it's good to know. I don't know what your Cholamite activity is for today. That's what you do, right? You found that with the kids? Yeah, it's a little bit easier. Thank you. It's good.
Keep them hiding.
Yeah, right. Okay, I think we got it. So Rava says over here that they would go in and they would give the Talmid to drink from a golden cup. So the Rava says again, that's again hyperbole. They wouldn't literally give the Talmid to drink from a golden cup. What it means is they would give it to drink, but they express the chashivos of hydrating the carbon tamid. It says give it from a golden cup. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Ami says as follows, Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibru Neviim Lashon Havai, Dibru Chachamim Lashon Havai. Both say sometimes the Torah exaggerates, right? The Neviim exaggerate, and Chazal exaggerate. How so? Dibra Torah Lashon Havai. So the Torah sometimes uses hyperbolic Lashon Dichsev, Arim Gedolos Ubatsuros Bashamayim. So I'll say, this is by the report of the Meraglim. So the Meraglim come along and say that the inhabitants of Canaan live in large fortified cities that go all the way up to the heavens. So I'll say, so obviously again, this was a bit hyperbolic, but Lamaisa again, making a point. So the Gemara says, could it be that their cities literally rose to the heavens? Ela guzma. Rather, again, what do you see? It was a bit of hyperbole. Dibru chachamim lashon havain. So ultimately, sometimes Chazal go ahead and speak in hyperbolic terms. Hada amran. Tafuach. So we'll say two examples. Number one is our Mishnah, that the ash pile was 300 kor, so that's a bit hyperbolic. And this giving of the tamid to drink from a golden cup is also a bit hyperbolic. Good. Dibru Neviim Lashon Havai. So again, the Neviim went ahead and sometimes use hyperbolic Lashon Dichsev. V'chal Ama Aris Mechalalim Bechalidim. So both say, this is actually very interesting. Here the Gemara is quoting from Malachim Aleph. This is when David HaMelech is on his deathbed. He's dying. His son, Adonio Ben Chagis, Avshalom also goes in and does it at different points. So Shlomo HaMelech, David HaMelech wants to proclaim Shlomo as the king. When they proclaim Shlomo as the king, they started blowing on the trumpets and on the flutes, and the lashon of the pasuk is "Vatibaka aretz bekolam." The earth shook with all of the playing of the instruments. So obviously, again, a bit hyperbolic. We both say the importance of this is that the Gemara is telling us that hyperbole is employed by our Kodesh Baruch Hu, by the Neviim, and by Chazal. And this is important because sometimes it keeps our eyes open to certain exaggerated statements that are hyperbolic nature. Without this statement, I would have been forced to assume that what? Especially whenever the Torah says something, it must be what? It must be literal. Now that I understand, no, hyperbole is a literary form employed by Chazal. And therefore, again, I understand certain psukim, certain statements are exaggerating nature. Amar Abiyanai bar Nachmani, Amar Shmuel, B'shol shel mekomos divra chacham b'loshon havai. In three places, Chazal used hyperbole. And where are they? Ve'eluhin, Tapuach, Gefen, Uparochas. So we'll say, where are the three places? The three places ultimately, again, are these. Well, we're going to see what these examples are in these particular situations. Lafuke midirava. This comes to exclude Rava. Desnan heshkes atamid bekoshel zos. We'll say, now here's what's interesting. So you have Rabbi Yanai bar Nachmani saying in the name of Shmuel, then Chazal only spoke hyperbolically in three places, which means it's only in these three and not in other places. This would disagree with Rava, because Rava said that when the Gemara made the statement that they gave the Talmid to drink from the golden cup, Rava said that was hyperbolic. It would be, according to Shmuel, that's not hyperbole, that they would literally give the Talmid to drink from a golden cup. Vama Rava, Guzma, Kamash Malan, Hani In, Hasam Lo. So we'll say, so according to Shmuel, giving of the Talmid to drink from a golden cup, in fact, was not hyperbolic, but in fact, is to be understood literally. Why? We'll say, now, why would they go ahead and give the Talmid to drink from a golden cup? It doesn't seem to make all that much sense. To which the Gemara says, to teach you, Ein Anios B'makom Ashirus. Well, this is a very profound statement. Ein Anios B'makom Ashirus means that essentially wherever you are to have a grand display, everything must be grand. And the Beis HaMikdash, which ultimately, again, is the grandest of the grand, a place of incredible Ashirus, there is no Anios B'makom Ashirus. And therefore what? Even if you are going to hydrate the carbon tamid, what are you going to hydrate the carbon tamid with? A golden vessel. pretty incredible. So Moshe, so just so you know, so far everyone's agreeing with the concept of hyperbole. Interestingly enough, you have Shmuel coming along and saying only in three places did Chazal utilize hyperbole, and one of the three is not the Tamid and the Golden Cup. So Rava says hydrating the Tamid from the Golden Cup is hyperbole. Shmuel saying it's not hyperbole. So we'll say, let's analyze the other three. So Tapuach HaDamram. So everybody seems to agree in the case of the ash heap, right? Where our Mishnah said that the ash heap was 300 kor, right? That seems to be a bit of hyperbole. Geffen, what's the case of Geffen? This is actually incredible. The Sanya. Geffen Zav Haisomedas HaPesach HaHecha. Both say there was a golden vine that hung over the entranceway to the Beis HaMikdash. Pretty incredible. Golden vine. So the Gemara says, Umudla agabe klunusos. And the way it was hanging is that they had poles of cedar wood, and this golden vine was strung over the poles of cedar wood. Listen to how beautiful this is. V'chomisha misnadev ala amadeis o gargir o eshkol mevi v'tolaba. I will say, if you wanted to make a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, so what could you donate? You could donate a golden leaf, a golden grape, or a golden cluster. Can you imagine? I want to point something out. You know, you see this a lot of times in shuls, right? Where they have none of the Eitz Chaim, right? And people donate a leaf. So it appears that this concept ultimately, again, was from the Beis HaMikdash. They have this golden vine, and literally, again, you could go ahead and donate a golden leaf, a golden grape, a golden cluster, or of course, we could swipe your credit card. In other words, you don't have to bring your own. We're happy to take care of it for you. Vitoleba, and I will say, it's incredible. They would hang it on the golden vine right opposite the entrance to the Hichol. It's incredible. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Naisa Haya, Venimnu Aleh Shlosh Me'os Kohanim Lifnosa. Lazar Rabbi Tzadok says, one time, we'll say, listen to this, the vine became so laden with golden leaves, golden grapes, and golden clusters that they needed 300 Kohanim to empty the vine. So we'll say, this the Gemara says is an example of guzma. This is an example, ultimately, again, of exaggerated, because we're going to see, by the way, the number 300 is used very often, right? The number 300 is used in the Mishnah, 300 kor of ash, 300 kohanim. So you begin to see a pattern. Whenever Chazal are reusing the same numbers, it's to convey a bit of hyperbole. Next, so I'll say, so this is another example of hyperbole. Let's listen to this. Parochas. What happened with the parochas? Here we go. Disnan, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Haskan. Parochas. Both say the parochas. Remember again, the parochas is the curtain which separates the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh. Right? So you would have the Holy of Holies, and there was a curtain. There's a whole machlokas. We saw this in Yuma. If it's one curtain, two curtains, it could be it's a double curtain. Okay, it's a curtain. Parochas. Avya tefach. Its thickness was a tefach, and it was woven through with 72 looms. Right, you needed 72 pieces of equipment to go ahead and make this parochas. Va'al kol neima v'neima, every single thread, esrim va'arba achutin. We'll say every thread of the parochas was made up. Every thread was made up of 24 strings. Arka arboim amma. It was 40 amos long. V'rachba esrim amma. It was 20 amos thick. Or mishmonim ushtayim ribo naasis. Bosheim said, "This is incredible." Mishmonim ushtayim ribo naasis. If you take a look, by the way, if you take a look at the Rosh address moment, mishmonim ushtayim ribo kilomar pebeis ribo dinari zav harimosyan. The cost of the parochas was 82,000 gold dinarim. 82,000 gold dinarim was the cost, was the value, where was the price to produce the parochas. Shabbos say again, I don't know what the modern day equivalent of that is, but can you imagine 82,000 gold pieces to produce the parochas? It's incredible, right? So the Gemara says, what happens? Ushtayim osin b'chol shana. It was very interesting. They had to make two parochsim every year. Now, why do they have to make two peroksim every year? If you look at Rashi over here, for just a moment on the right hand side, we'll see actually that both the Rabbeinu Gershom explains over here that the reason they would have to go ahead and make two, ultimately again, was because of the smoke. Or there was smoke damage to the parochas. Why was the smoke damage to the parochas? Because remember, again, the parochas is on the inside. So it appears that as a result of the smoke of the ketores, or the mizbeach hapanimi, they made two new parochasim every single year. Again, what number do you see? 300. Whenever they had to immerse the parochas, let's say for some reason, it became ritually impure for some other reason, right? Sahalocha lamaisa. They needed 300 kind of. So again, another example of hyperbole. Good. Hechalu ma'alin b'gizor and l'sadir sa'ma'arocho chutz mishal zayis u'mishal gefes. So let's remember again, so the Mishnah said, technically speaking, back to the ma'arocho now. So technically speaking, you can go ahead and use any type of wood you want for the pyre of the mizbeach. But practically, the Mishnah says, they did not use zayis and gefen. They didn't use grapevines, and they did not use wood from olive trees. Why is that? This is incredible. Hani mai taima. Supposed to get ready for this. Why not? So Rav Papa Amar, mishum de katri. Supposed to say, here we're going to see an interesting machlokas. If you look at Rashi says over here, katri, Rashi says, kilomar, yeshvem ksharim, So Rav Papa says it's because this type of wood has knots. Right? The wood has knots. So because the wood has knots, therefore what happens? Moisture gets stuck there. Because moisture gets stuck there, the wood doesn't burn. Now, interestingly enough, Rashi also points out, and the Rabbeinu Gershom actually changes the girsa from katri to katmi. Katmi means it smokes. It causes too much, this type of wood causes too much smoke. Rashi understands they're one and the same. Meaning, there seems to be a machlokas in girsa. Do we not use it because it has knots and therefore causes smoke? Or I should say, it has knots and therefore doesn't burn well or causes smoke. Rashi seems to merge everything together. Because it has knots and therefore retains moisture, it doesn't burn well. And what do you mean it doesn't burn well? That when you burn it, it smokes. It smokes. We don't like smoke. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar, this is wild. Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We don't burn vines and olive trees, ultimately, again, because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. What does that mean, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Say, get ready for this. Look at Rashi. Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Shem Yisrifu Azeisim Vagifonim Lo Yimtzu Yayin Lishdos V'shemen Lasuch V'techarev Eretz Yisrael. Hosai, if there is no wine to drink, the Jews go where the wine is. Right? So Lamaisa again, if there's no wine in Eretz Yisrael, there's no olives, right, for olive oil in Eretz Yisrael, people are going to leave the land. Which I will say, by the way, is an incredible, incredible insight. Right? That Chazal understood that for people to be happy where they are, Ruchnius is fantastic. But generally, Ruchnius does not work unless people have what? Unless people have their Gashmius. It's an incredible yisod, and it's very important. And it's part of the beauty of Yiddishkeit. Some religions kind of preach this idea that in order to find God, you have to swear off physicality and become ascetics. Yiddishkeit realizes it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You want people to be spiritually balanced and happy. Let them have their ruchnius and their gashmius. So don't burn down the vineyards and the olive trees. Let people have their wine. Let people have their oil, and everyone's going to be happy. Quite incredible. So for Rabbi Osei, so everyone's agreeing. Meaning, there's no machlokas in the Mishnah. Everyone is agreeing that halacha lemaisa, we're not going to use olive branches and vines for the ma'aracha. Either because of one of two possibilities. Either because they have knots, therefore again retain moisture, don't burn well, create smoke, or because of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So Meisve, the mirror is the kasha, ala itzim asher ala ish, the pasuk says, Rabbosai, when ultimately again referring to the sacrificial parts, so you shall put the sacrificial parts right al ha'itzim asher al ha'ish, on the wood that is on top of the fire. So the Gemara says eitzim hanusuchim lihios ish. It's the type of wood ultimately again that lends itself ultimately to burning well. Umaynihu, what type of wood is this? Dukri shipot delokatri vaazli mikta misoch. If you look at the Rush says over here, Umaynihu dukri shapiri delokatri bikios yafos. Good pieces of wood that are cut well, that ultimately, again, kind of burn, miktar misocho, they burn from the inside. V'chi kala itzim kshir l'ma'aracha. So what's this? In other words, that for the mizbeach, you want to use, well, good burning wood. V'chi kala itzim kshir l'ma'aracha is all type of wood, ultimately, again, good for the ma'aracha. Hein, kala itzim kshirim, yes, all types of wood are good. Chutz min zayis v'gefen. All types of wood are good, except for Zayis and Geffen, which we've seen, olive trees, right? Olive trees, ultimately, again, and Geffen. Ava be'elu hayu regilin. So we'll say, even though all types of wood are kosher, there were some types of wood that they dafka used more often. What type? Bimarbios shalteina, vishal egos, vishal eis shemes. So we'll say, so apparently, the preferred wood was branches from a fig tree, from nut trees, and from this thing called Eitz Shemen. I will say, now obviously, Eitz Shemen is different than what? Different than what? Than olive trees, right? There was this type of thing, there was this type of tree called an Eitz Shemen, which is obviously is not an olive tree, or maybe it's a different type of olive tree. Rabbi Eliezer Mosif, Af Shel Mayish, Vishal Olon, Vishal Dekel, Vishal Charuv, Vishal Shikma. Rabbi Eliezer increases the list, and he says you could also use a mayish tree, an olon tree, a dekel, right? Dekel is a date palm. Charuv is a carob tree. Shikma is a sycamore tree. Right? Bishlam alaman darim mishum dekatri. So I want to say, so now I understand if you hold that we don't use grapevines or olive trees because they have knots. And because of the knots, they retain moisture, don't burn well, maybe produce smoke as well. This is what they're arguing about. So that's what they're arguing about. The machlokes is, when we say any wood that has knots you can't use, is that only knots that are visible from the outside? But if it has knots on the inside, we don't care. And the other opinion will say, no, whether it has knots on the outside or on the inside, we don't want you to use that type of branch. Umar Savar, Kevin de Lokachi Migavoi, Afagav de Mivrai Kachi Maisin. The other opinion says, no, as long as it doesn't have knots on the outside, even if it has knots on the inside, we're okay with you using it. Eleman Darmishum Yishavarit Yisrael. Also, according to the opinion who says that ultimately, again, we don't want you using grapevines and olive branches because of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So we'll say, so we would assume that means as follows. That in general, what that means is, for wood for the Mizbeach, we would rather you not use wood from trees that produce fruit. In other words, use wood from non-fruit-bearing trees. Because this way, Allah Chalamaisa, you're not diminishing from Yishev Eretz Yisrael. In other words, there's enough wood to go around from trees that don't produce fruit. You don't have to use fruit-producing wood. Dekel mi lesle mishum eretz Yisrael. So we'll say, why would we let you use a date palm? Right, date palms produce what? They go wild, guess. Dates. Right, shivas aminim. So we don't want you using date palms for firewood. So we'll say, presumably, the same Andam who holds that you can't go ahead and use vines or use olive branches, all right, olive trees, to go ahead and for the ma'arach. It would also say that you shouldn't use a dekel, right? You shouldn't use a date palm. Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Mishu Yishev Eretz Yisrael, Elamadorim dekel mi leslay mishum mi Yishev Eretz Yisrael, Omer lecha, ulatameich, teina, leslay mishum mi Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So we'll say, if that's the case, if you're going to ask Kishon a date palm, then what? Fig trees is also the same kasha. Why would you use a fig tree? Right at the end of the day, you're destroying a fruit-bearing tree. But rather, what do you have to talk about? When we say that you could use a fig tree, what type of fig tree is it? The type of fig tree that does not produce figs. So it's a sterile fig tree. All right, so it's the min of a fig tree, but it's not producing figs. Therefore, Allah lemaisa, that type of wood you could use. To which the Gemara says, Dekal Nami, but the law of it pera. So you're going to say, therefore, again, the case of the date palm is the same thing. Must be a sterile date palm. All right, so we'll say, so it's a palm tree that does not produce dates. So you says, 1 second. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Umiika te'ina de la of the pera. We'll say, is there such a thing as a fig tree that does not produce figs? So we'll say, so that you could find a palm tree that doesn't produce dates, that we know. That we know, right? You could find species of date palms that do not produce dates. So you can see this in Eretz Yisrael everywhere, right? Everywhere you could see this, right? Of date palms, you could see date palms that produce dates, obviously. But you could see plenty of date palm trees that are in the date palm family that Lamaise said don't produce dates. I don't know what the horticultural explanation of that is, but I'm sure somebody will Google it before I finish. Right? So again, but the Te'ina, so the fig tree, that sounds strange, right? Is there such a thing as a fig tree that doesn't produce figs? Tirchon as well, so this is incredible. The Gemara says, yes, in fact, there is such a thing. How do you make this? So in Kidirachbo, Domarachbo, Rachbo says, Maisi. So we'll say, do it yourself. So we'll say, it's actually, right? This is incredible engineering, right? This is fig tree engineering. Listen to this. What would you do? If you want to produce, and we'll say, you're going to see why somebody would want to do this in just a moment. Kidirachbo, Domarachbo, get ready for this. Maisi te'ini chiyurta. So we'll say, so here's what you start with. You start ultimately again with a fig tree that produces white dates. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at the last Rashi says over here, Ram Rachba Maisi Tene Chiyurta, Tenim Levanos, Osin Tenim Ro'osin. White figs are considered to be the most inferior species of figs. Right? And so what happens? You go ahead and you take white figs, so Maisi Tene Chiyurta, top of Lamid, the Shaifi Labid de Chavla de Tzivsa, the sarich ale bizra. So what do? You then take the figs, and you go ahead and you take really what you're taking is the figs and the fig branches. You are rubbing them bechavlo ditzivsa the sarich ale. If you look at Rashi, so Rashi says over here. Actually, look at the Rush. The shayfila bechavlo ditzivsa meshaf sheif bechaval haasui mitzvas dekel. You go and you rub it against a rope that is made from the bark of a date palm, bechozek, right? You rub it strongly, esateino, atshiyasir kala klipa me'alea. You take, ultimately, again, you take, or we'll say what you're taking, really what you're taking is the date palm, is the fig branches. You're taking the fig branches of a fig tree that produces white dates. You're rubbing it against a rope that is made from a palm tree, and you're rubbing it until ultimately, again, the outer layer of the bark peels off. And what happens? And I will say, as a result of that, together with the figs, so now I will say, as a result of that, everything falls out to the figs, the seeds fall out to the figs. The Rush says, V'sarech alei bizra, misoch ze yatza, v'yichle es hazera shebe'emtsa ha'ilan, v'hu leif ha'ilan, shememenu totsasbi. So I will say, essentially what you do is like this. You take, okay, here's how you start. Step one. Take the branches of a fig tree that produces white figs. Step two. Get yourself some rope made from a decal, made from a date palm. Step three. It's very soothing. Step three. Go ahead and take the branches, rub them against the rope. Essentially, we'll see what's happening over here. Until the entire outer layer of the fig branch comes out. Now, saying that what you're actually extracting from that is the sap and the seeds from the actual branch of the white fig tree. So what you're essentially doing is you're rubbing out the vitality to produce more figs from that particular branch. Okay, what's next? The kavri, hecha demasik yama sirtun. We'll say then, take the leftover now. We'll say now what you have left is a shoot, essentially, right? You have a fig shoot, mm-hmm. right? The fig shoot that originally produced white figs. All you have is that shoot. Bury that in a place where there is a heavy concentration of sea sediment. sea sediment. That's what it means. Heyso kavri, so bury it. Heycha demasik yama sirtun, where the sea deposits its sediment. And if you do this, kora avda, the shoots will grow. And the shoots will grow, I'll say, into very strong pieces of wood. But peri lo avda. But because you rubbed out the sap and you rubbed out the seeds, so ultimately it won't produce fruit. So interestingly enough, it will produce very strong wood, but will not produce fruit. Utlas, so I'll say, peri lo avdi. Utlas berichi minayu lo mechas kalu gamla. And I'll say, ultimately again, it will produce such strong wood that literally, again, you will not be able to transport three pieces of this wood over a bridge because they'll be too heavy for the bridge to support them. So we'll say, so this is the example over here of how halach, I'm sorry?
Is that hyperbole?
It might be a bit of hyperbole also. I don't know. You know, it's not brought down in the example, but it could be. The idea over here being that ultimately, again, so we'll say, here's the case of te'ena wood. So essentially, you are genetically engineering te'ina trees that have the strongest wood but don't produce peiro. So we'll say, so this would be the type of te'ina tree that apparently you could use for the ma'aracha, and you are not taking away from Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why not? Because lamaisa, again, it can't bear fruit. All right, so we'll stop over here for today. And Emir Hashem will finish the parak and begin the next daf tomorrow. Shkar Chavosayim. Shkoyah. Chavosayim needs the bench. So we have a minion.